The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of oil of peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Because you guys have just introduced a bill yesterday that is bone-chilling.
As I always say, what happens in Canada today may happen in the U.S. 5 years from now. It's like we're a bad time machine to see your future. This week, Justin Trudeau introduced a new bill called Bill C-63. It's got a lot of things in it that are atrocious. He's created a new hate crime bill, life in prison, new hate crime law. There's nothing that gets you life in prison in Canada, not even murder, but hate speech now does. He's created a pre-crime for hate. Trudeau has now said that anyone in Canada, even non-citizens, can file hate speech complaints against anyone. And if they're successful, they get $20,000 from the target, and the target has to pay a fine of up to $50,000 on Twitter. Oh, and by the way, this applies to all of your historical work that's online. So as long as it's still online and you control it,
oh my God,
they can go back through your history, 5 years, 10 years, and why wouldn't they complain about literally every tweet you make, literally every YouTube video? There's no cost.
Hello and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Show. This is Richard Palmer standing in for your regular host, Mr. Stephen Flurry, coming to you live from our studio in Edstone, England. It's been quite a long time since I think we've gone out live from here. It's been a long time anyway, but there was a period of time where I think we didn't have anyone to run the producer booth, and so we were recording things a little ahead of time. Now we have George Haddad, the older brother of our previous producer, running the board for us there. So, Jacob, you can watch this very closely and enjoy pointing out every little mistake if you spot any that that your brother makes, if you like. But no, we're very glad to have the help. Very glad to be able to go back to doing this. Very glad to be with you, no matter how you're joining us, whether through Rumble, with our friends at Live from America TV. We've grown so much all the time since I've been on doing this. Well, I've been stunned on the attack on free speech that has been going on around the world. I think if you'd have told me a few years ago just some of the things that are happening now, I would not have believed you. Under laws that are right now in force or in the process of going into force right now, you can go to jail for life because of something you've said. You could be placed under house arrest and blocked from going online because of something the government fears you might say. You can have the police called on you anonymously because of something you said in the privacy of your own home. Or you can have citizens paid to call in and denounce you. To the authorities. These are aspects of laws that aren't simply underway in third world countries or former Soviet countries or in Russia. These are measures that are under consideration or in practice in wealthy first world countries that have a tradition of freedom and democracy and the kind of places that, I don't know, 5 years ago or so, I might have said would never ever do this. These are aspects of laws that are under consideration in several different countries, one of which is even in the United States. And you put it all together and you can see there is a global war on freedom of speech going on right now. Now, I'll look at the American one first. And in some ways, it's not the most extreme, but for me, it's one of the most surprising because there is the First Amendment here, because there is Britain, Canada, elsewhere, we have a tradition of free speech. But it doesn't have that same kind of robust protection of the First Amendment that it does in the United States. But just this month, Washington State, their House and their Senate passed a new bill that will set up a, quote, hate speech hotline. And what this will do is callers can receive up to $2,000 for snitching on other people. And honestly, when I first saw the report about this news, I didn't really believe it. It wasn't in the mainstream media. It was on some news site that I had never really heard of before. So I was kind of skeptical. Like, really? Stasi style, report your neighbor to the authorities, hotline set up in the United States, and we'll pay bounties. We'll pay you a couple of thousand. That can't be true. That doesn't sound right. So I looked it up. I found the text of the law. This is from the law. It says the Attorney General's office may provide compensation to persons targeted or affected by hate crimes and bias incidents by authorizing expenditures from the Washington Hate Crime and Bias Incident account established in Section 3 of this act up to a maximum of $2,000 per person targeted by or affected by a specific hate crime or bias incident. So you say that you've been a victim of a hate crime, you can call up this number, you report on the person who has done it, and they'll give you $2,000. And you might be thinking, when I was reading that, I was like, okay, well, hate crime, what's a bias incident? What does that mean? The law defines it, and it says a bias incident is including speech against a protected group of people, and it lists the protected class. You know, I think you can guess what it would be. Race, gender, if somebody's homosexual or transgender, something like that. I can't remember if age was a criteria in this one, but they have their list of protected criteria. And a bias incident is something against one of these people in that protected, one of these protected classes where, quote, criminal investigation or prosecution is impossible or inappropriate. So something that someone says could be perfectly legal. And that someone can still phone in and get $2,000 for reporting your perfectly legal speech. I mean, why is the government trying to even collect examples of this perfectly legal speech? I mean, you look at the way that that the NSA and a lot of these other organizations have been weaponized to go after those that think wrongly or go to the wrong protest. Well, I think creating a list of people that have had hate speech that is illegal or is not illegal, you can certainly see how that list would very probably be abused. And I'm saying someone can report you and keeping it very, very quite deliberately, because it's not even citizens reporting on fellow citizens. You don't have to be a citizen of Washington or even of the United States to use this hotline. Non-citizens can call in. And so, like I said, I think it's amazing you could have something like this in the United States that really supports free speech. And okay, Washington State is trying this. When you look at how some of these states in the north, in the northwest, were trying things like drug legalization, and they went first and they went most extreme, but then it starts popping up in California copies and Michigan copies and all of these other states. How long is it until hate crime hotlines are coming to a state near you? And as we heard on the cold open there from Ezra Levant, he was talking about a Canada bill that we'll get to. Again, you see some of these things that are happening in other countries. Certainly the radical left, you look at what they're saying, I think they admire, or I know they admire these efforts from other countries. They're saying, well, America should do these things. They're saying the First Amendment gets in the way of us doing these things. But they are pushing for that they're pushing for this abroad. It's coming soon to America. I mean, closer to where I am, we have Scotland's Hate Crime and Public Order Act going into force on April 1st. So just a couple of weeks away, we're getting this brand new law going into force in Scotland. And you've got to be very careful now what you say in Scotland. So it creates a new offence, stirring up hatred against protected characteristics. And these protected characteristics, you know, it's the standard age, disability, religion, sexual orientation, gender identity. But it creates this new offence of stirring up hatred. And it applies even in the home, it's not about electronic communication. If it's just two people sitting around the dinner table and you say something that is deemed hateful against this protected institution, they can report you to the police. And in the run-up to this, the Scottish police and the Scottish government are running a series of ad campaigns encouraging people to take advantage of this new law. Here's some excerpts from one of these new ad campaigns.
In Scotland, the law recognises hate crimes as motivated by prejudice based on disability, race, religion, sexual orientation and transgender identity. Now, hate crime can happen online, can happen in person, it could be abusive behaviour, all the way through to serious physical assault on a person. Now, the consequences for the perpetrators of hate crime can be pretty significant. Police will take robust action, you will be investigated and you will face the full force of the justice system. Hate hurts. If you witness a hate crime, please report it. Find out more at safer.scot.
They have a whole load of these very produced ads on their YouTube account. What cracks me up is looking at the view count, and it's like 60, 70 views. I think the most viewed one had 200 or 300. So at least on YouTube, they're not doing particularly well. I'm sure they're plastering the airways with them on TV over in Scotland. But this is they've released this just in the month or so before their new hate crime law comes out. And again, it talks about can escalate to assault. The crime is just about speech. Like one of their other ads shows somebody just looking kind of miserable while their phone pings. This is not about attacking people because they're a different race or something like that. It is about content the government does not like. And using this hate as an excuse to ban all kinds of content. This Douglas Murray, we've played him a few clips from him on the show. He was being interviewed by Sky News Australia. I don't know why we have to go all the way to Australia to get some good coverage on what is happening in Scotland. You would have thought that this would be all over the UK media, given Scotland's part of the UK. We go there a fair bit, but nope. But this is what he said talking about it. He made some good points on Sky News Australia.
We tried this sort of thing in Europe in the past. We tried having inquisitions. We tried having a clerical class who decided for the better of the public what the public could know, read, and say. It didn't work out. And the Scottish Enlightenment, among other things, freed the people of Scotland and the world from those kinds of superstitions. And yet here we are, it seems, back again. And so it'll only be stopped if enough people say, no, this isn't Scotland and this isn't freedom.
I thought that was a good point. You go back to the Holy Roman Empire and this is exactly what they were doing. Coming up with trying to dictate what people thought, what people said. I mean, we'll come to that a little bit at the end. But just to continue this overview of some of these different hate crime legislations, Ireland is also working on a hate crime speech bill. It's well on its way to becoming law. I think it's passed through one house of parliament. It's passed a couple of readings in the other one. So it seems all set to pass. Its unique aspect is it criminalizes the possession of hate speech. So if the government deems what I am saying hate speech and I put it in an email and send it to you, well, then you are liable. You could face 5 years in prison for possessing that email. I guess if it's hate speech, you've got to delete it instantly or something like that. Think of this. We've got a very real scenario. We had our Pride issue of the Trumpet magazine back in, I think it was June of this last year. So that gave you the biblical truth straight up about what the Bible says about the pride that all of our nations express in homosexuality. And really being pretty upfront about and exposing this evil in a way that even too many Christian groups are afraid to do. So we had that issue of the magazine. What if the Irish government decided that that was hate speech? The law doesn't define what hate is. It's pretty nebulous. It seems very much left to whoever's interpreting it and their opinion. So what have they decided that our magazine was hate speech? Well, then people in Ireland could face 5 years in jail for receiving our magazine. I mean, there's no offices, there's no church office in Ireland. We have a small congregation that meets there, but so I guess there's no office that they could go after or corporate entity they could attack. But they could go after the people that receive the magazine. That may be enough for you to be accused of hate crimes. Now, as you saw in the cold open, Canada may be one of the worst, where they've got their law that they've just started discussing, and more details of that have been coming out over the last month or two. And here, there's so many really disturbing parts of this law. There's where the government can say that they think you might say something wrong in the future. I think it's... They've got these different penalties in this Canadian law for different, you know, if you say something that expresses dislike, treated differently than if you depreciate or disdain, I think it is. I can't remember exactly. Or detestation. The law doesn't really get into detail on what the difference between dislike and detesting something is, but if the government thinks that you might indicate that you detest one of these protected groups, and again, look who's interpreting it. They're going to twist that for their own ends. Well, if you might do something in the future, they can put you under house arrest. And included in this house arrest is a communications ban. So presumably that means they put you under house arrest for a year and they cut you off from the internet. So for a lot of people, that would mean silencing them and making their life pretty miserable for a year. If they try to get around the communications ban, try to get online, that's a year in jail. And you haven't done anything. That's because it's purely based on what the government thinks you might say in the future. And if you put that into practice, that seems like free license to lock anyone you like up. And it seems like anybody you could say, well, I think this individual is reasonably likely to say something hateful in the future. That's probably true about anyone, depending on how broadly you define your terms here. I mean, hate crime, it just means expressing detestation or vilification of a protected group. So this group is bad. How nuanced are they going to be if you say, well, this behavior that this group are participating in is bad? I don't know, but it basically seems like a license to me for the government to lock up anyone they want. They also have a law that includes, as part of this law, life imprisonment. So if you are deemed having called for genocide, you can face life in jail. Which, as you heard again, Ezra Levant, he was put through the ringer. I remember watching that when I was, I think, fairly new in the Trumpet Department. And he was being hauled through the Canadian Human Rights Commission along with Mark Stein. And there were some pretty funny sometimes because they really mocked their inquisitors. But they were being put through the ringer by the Human Rights Commission there. You know, he knows what he's talking about. So, but he was, he's been through all of the ringer there before. So he was pointing out, well, not even murder carries life imprisonment in Canada, but they want to make sure that this does. And remember, the left says the right is trying to carry out a transgender genocide. That if you don't get fully on board with their agenda on transgenderism, you're guilty of genocide. And that misgendering someone, if somebody says that they're a girl, doesn't matter if they've got a beard and a very, you know, that they're a man, if you call them a man, well, that's violence, that's literal violence, the left says. So you can very easily see how this is about, you know, we think you might misgender someone in the future, life in prison. You don't get fully on board with a transgender movement, well, that's genocide. Life in prison. Sorry, I should say house arrest, not life in prison for might commit something in the future. And then they've got all of these fines that come to tens of thousands of dollars. And Ezra Levant, I think in the rest of that interview, he kind of points out that you can make these accusations anonymously. And if you kind of claim that you've been affected, you could get $20,000 up potential compensation from your victim, and they get fined even more. And then the other part of this is it applies retrospectively. So for Canadians, you just go through somebody else's Twitter account and look at anything they've ever said in the past. And if you can find something that you can feel, and you're in a protected class, find something that you can be offended by, you could hit the jackpot. I guess £20,000, that's not the jackpot, or Canadian dollars these days, that's not the jackpot, but that's a lot of money. There's a company that you're annoyed with. You've lost your job. You've broken up with someone. someone's been rude to you, go through their social media history, find some way of hauling them before the Canadian Inquisition, and you're really going to hurt them and could get rich yourself. This retrospectively thing, though, it does make me wonder, you know, are you going to see people going to jail for things that they said five minutes ago, saying there are two genders was not controversial, was not hateful? Are you going to have people being hauled to jail for because they said that back when everybody thought that? You go back to 10, 15 years ago and people like Barack Obama were saying, well, we're dead against homosexual marriage. Absolutely not. Shouldn't happen. Could people go to jail for things that they've said then? I wouldn't be that surprised if this law gets watered down. It's so extreme as they try to get this passed. But I think it does show something else about Canada. I think it shows that the left believes that they're going to be in power indefinitely in Canada. The country, that democracy is over in this country that has the largest border with the United States and has such a history of freedom and democracy. Because if you have a normal political system with a fair, neutral judiciary, you would be insane to pass a law like this. Because yes, you could use it to target your opponents today, but tomorrow your opponents are going to be the government and they could use the same law against you. We've all seen the pictures of Justin Trudeau in blackface, right? Isn't that a hate crime? So apply this law retroactively, you've got him. I think the fact that they're passing this law at all shows that they believe the Conservatives are never coming back to power and that they have almost total control over the courts. They believe they control the government and the courts for good. And so they're confident that this law is not going to be used against them. And it's the only way I think it would make sense to pass a law like this. I'm just going on into more of these details that sets up basically a new inquisition, the Digital Safety Commission. The Spectator wrote on this. It talked about how the Digital Safety Commission can, without oversight, require companies to block access to any content, conduct investigations, hold secret hearings, require the companies to hand over specific content and give all data collected to third-party researchers accredited by the commission. All data, any content, no oversight. Does that sound crazy? There's more. The ostensible purpose of putting the commission and not the ordinary police in charge is so that they can act informally and quickly, i.e. without a warrant, in situations where material victimizing a child could spread quickly across the internet. What that means in effect is that the Digital Safety Commission is not accountable and does not have to justify its actions. As the Canadian Civil Liberties Association says in its sharply worded critique of the bill, it endows government appointees with vast authority to interpret the law, make up new rules, enforce them, and then serve as judge, jury, and executioner. That's what this does. I mean, I should note, for a lot of these laws, but especially this Canadian law, they always wrap them up in something very good. Like this Canadian law, they're not coming to the voters and making the case of, well, we need to get rid of hate crime and police hate online. That's fundamentally not what they're saying. Instead, they're up there saying, we're going after, we want to prevent child abuse online. And this is about shutting down child pornography. And we need to do more to shut down child pornography on social media. They're probably right. I think governments genuinely aren't doing enough. And certainly social media companies, I mean, we've seen that. That's been exposed as Elon Musk took over Twitter. They aren't doing enough to shut this kind of thing down. So they come up with this good-sounding justification, but then all of the substance of the bill is just Orwellian. And most of it has nothing to do with this stated purpose at all. I mean, you can tell it's a bad bill when they're trying to Trojan horse its way through and have it pretend to be something that it's not. And we haven't even talked about Europe yet. There are some very restrictive laws in there. We have an article in our latest Trumpet print edition from Trumpet editor-in-chief Gerald Flurry. It's called The EU's War on Free Speech. And in that article, he talks about the EU's Digital Service Act. So that went into place just this year. And this allows, or maybe that was last year by the time that I might be a little out of date on this. I think that was last year. But it empowers the EU to shut down any information that they disagree with, put massive fines on social media companies if they don't shut down what the EU says is disinformation. And then it talks about how in December, the European Digital Media Observatory, they published this report into disinformation. Here's our annual summary of disinformation across the European Union in 2023. So it's very revealing because it shows you what the EU believes is disinformation. And when they pass this law and set up this Digital Service Act that says you must shut down disinformation, okay, well, what does that mean? And you look at this report from the Digital Media Observatory, it shows you what it means. And it was all kinds of things. It was talk about climate change. It was, you know, if you complain that electric cars aren't as good as petrol cars or fossil fuel cars, that gets you in the EU's Digital Media Observatory report for spreading disinformation. That's disinformation. Making jokes about it being a warm winter. Well, that's disinformation. Anything like that. You disagree with climate change in any way, disinformation. Anything about LGBTQI star plus, you know, the way I saw one from Canada recently where they added so many acronyms at the end. But, I mean, it's all perversion. You talk about that wrongly, disinformation. If, you know, anything other than supporting exactly that agenda, it's disinformation. Claiming that migrants are violent or that they are a drain on national resources, that is disinformation. So if you want to have a discussion about, you know, even if it's just this discussion about, well, should we allow migration? What are the pros? What are the cons? Does bringing in migrants bring in more migrant, more violent? You know, well, that's disinformation. That needs to be shut down. If you say that a government cares more about migrants than its own people, it says that is disinformation. I mean, some of these things are 100% verifiable fact. Others of these things are opinion that, I mean, it's not disinformation. You could hold, reasonable people could hold an opinion in different ways on these subjects, but the EU just wants to silence it. And Mr. Flurry said in that article, European history is filled with examples of what happened when leaders attained great heights of power. Study the medieval Holy Roman Empire, for example, and you can see how they dealt with disinformation. They accused people of heresy and then tortured or killed them. And this is what Douglas Murray was saying. This is the same spirit that's rising up, not just in Europe, though. You see it in the supposed homes of free speech and bastions of freedom and democracy. I mean, the EU has never really been holy. I'm not surprised to see this happening in Europe. I think anyone who has a good understanding of the history of the European Union and where it came from is not surprised by what, like, that's in their DNA. That's the way they've always done things. To me, what's really shocking is to see the same thing happening in Britain and Canada and the US, where it is so opposite to our heritage, to what we've always done. And it made, to me, this brought to light, in new light, this prophecy that we talk about quite a lot on this show in 2 Kings chapter 14. I might turn there and read that. I've got my Bible here. 2 Kings 14 and verse 26. It immediately brought to mind a particular phrase from here and gave it fresh impact and clarity to me, where it says in 2 Kings 14 and verse 26, the Eternal saw the affliction of Israel, that it was very bitter, for there was not any shut up, nor any left, nor any helper for Israel. And the Eternal said not that he would blot out the name of Israel, but they would be saved from under heaven, but he saved them by the hand of Jeroboam, the son of Joash. This talks about being bitter affliction. You know, it's very bitter. There's no helper. And like we talk about quite a lot on this show, and it's explained in great detail in our free book, America Under Attack. This is prophetic. The book of Amos is a book full of prophecy. The book of Amos has wonderful prophecies of superabundant harvests and peace and all of these prophecies that haven't happened in history because they're future prophecies. They're prophecies of a millennial rule after the return of Jesus Christ. This whole book is about the future. But this book has this big, good-sized section in Amos chapter 7 about a confrontation between God's prophet and a king Jeroboam. And what this tells us is there is a modern Jeroboam type. That the history of the ancient King Jeroboam II that's described in 2 Kings 14, we're going to have that happen again. We're going to have a parallel of that, where there's bitter affliction. And then God uses this King Jeroboam to end that affliction. And God intervenes to stop that affliction. And why? Well, a major reason is so that his message can go out again. So that this warning message can go out one last time. And if he didn't intervene, well, this bitter affliction would mean the message couldn't go out. The message would be stopped. And that's what we're seeing with a lot of these anti-free speech laws. And there is a real spiritual agenda here. There's an evil spirit world. There's an agenda that wants to control what you think. There's a war on for your mind. I mean, we had this article that went up on the website last night. It was from Mr. Stephen Flurry. So if you're missing Mr. Flurry, if you're missing your regular host, don't worry. I don't feel offended. And you can still get your daily dose of him by going onto the Trumpet website. And it's one of the top articles there. The regime fears an educated citizenry. And in that article, he quotes from Colossians 2, verses 18 and verse 23, it says, "Let no man beguile you of your reward in a voluntary humility and worship of angels or demons," as it should read, "intruding into those things which he has seen." Again, that's the correct translation. "Vainly puffed up by his fleshly mind, which things indeed have a show of wisdom in will worship." You know, this is the age that we live in. Believe what we say because we say it. And we don't want any competing ideas or competing facts to get in the way. If it differs from what we in authority say you should think, well, that is disinformation. Mr. Flurry wrote, "We live in an age of truth blocking, reality rejecting will worship. People engage in will worship when they place their own will or the will of another being above reality, which is to say above the God of reality. They are not interested in primary sources like the Bible. Take the Apostle Paul's advice and let no man beguile you with censorship or AI deception. Now is the time to delve into primary sources and hold fast to the truth." So this is the bitter affliction that we see, or part of that. Blocking out freedom of speech, trying to blot out any kind of message that speaks the truth from going out. This is also from that free book, America Under Attack. It says, "With radicals in power, how could anyone complete God's work of delivering the warnings of Amos to America and its leaders?" You know, there's this warning that has to go out. With this bitter affliction, that can't. He says, "Already God had to intervene and stop the evil that was happening, or the name of Israel would be blotted out. And God's very elect and their warning message are at the heart of that spiritual name of Israel. This warning message is at the heart of what's being targeted. Look at how leftists are now using their power in media, technology companies, and social media to silence anyone who disagrees with them. They're clamping down on free speech and trampling the supreme law of the land. And now states are getting involved. Our forefathers," writes Mr. Flurry, "had to die to secure our freedom of speech and freedom of religion. What kind of people are we dealing with? Those who are now in charge stole the election. Those criminals are fighting against the living God. You can be sure that God will not let that stand. God's warning message is going to get out there. God will not let them blot out our work or our message because we have a job to do. God opens doors that nobody can shut, and he will shut them when they need to be shut. So we'll put it in God's hands and simply trust him." That was from America Under Attack. That fully exposes the spiritual agenda behind all of this. You can order that on our website, thetrumpet.com. You can get I've mentioned the Trumpet magazine as well. We'd be very happy to give you a free subscription to that. Get it while there's no 5-year prison sentence in your country for receiving that magazine. You can sign up there at thetrumpet.com. You can also give us a call on 1-866-930-3024, or you can email us at td@thetrumpet.com. We'll be right back.
Education is something most people take for granted. We assume it is something one acquires after graduating from a college or university. Yet the 20th century knowledge explosion has done little to solve the problems of this world. Crime, broken families, suicide, disease, mass illiteracy, and poverty. Why, in a world filled with so much advanced material knowledge, are there so many unsolvable problems? Why, after 6,000 years, has mankind been unable to find the solution to its escalating evils or to the number one problem it now faces, that of human survival? Our free booklet, Education with Vision, will show you what is wrong with education today. It will show you what is true education with vision and how to achieve it. Request your free copy of Education with Vision at our website, thetrumpet.com.
Well, there are new details tonight regarding the death of 16-year-old Nex Benedict, a non-binary student who died just one day after getting into a fight with three other students. Benedict's death has sparked nationwide demonstrations against anti-LGBTQ rhetoric.
From rallies in New York,
Nex Benedict,
to walkouts in Oklahoma.
Justice for Nex!
Members of the LGBTQ community showed their support for Nex Benedict, a 16-year-old non-binary student who died earlier this month after a fight at their Owosso, Oklahoma high school. A preliminary autopsy report says Nex did not die from injuries in the fight. The harassment is familiar to LGBTQ youth, like Alex DeRoyne.
What happened on that individual level is an individual situation that happens because of a systematic problem.
DeRoyne puts some of the blame on Oklahoma leaders who have pushed anti-LGBTQ laws in the state.
But Nex's death is raising concerns in LGBTQ plus communities and igniting fear in some families and among students who identify as queer.
It is important context to note for this story that in 2022, Oklahoma did pass a transgender and non-binary bathroom ban so that students are not allowed to use the bathroom that their gender identity aligns with. Yeah, right now it's a lot of fear from families that I'm hearing. Right now in the Oklahoma State Legislature, more than 50-plus anti-LGBTQ plus bills have been introduced so far this session.
Oklahoma leads the nation in bills targeting LGBTQ people with 54 right now. And the students also say there's a pervasive climate of bullying at the school, and they think that that contributed to Nex's death.
The next day, Nex's mom calling 911, telling dispatchers Nex is having trouble breathing. She later apologized on a GoFundMe page for not using Nex's desired pronouns.
She got beat up at school yesterday. I took her to the hospital last night.
Paramedics rushed Nex to the hospital, where they later died.
To their death, does the White House think that this case should be the subject of a federal hate crime investigation?
I'm going to be really careful. That is something for the Department of Justice to decide on.
Welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Show. Once again, this is Richard Palmer standing in for your regular host, Mr. Stephen Flurry. Well, I don't want to spend a huge amount of time on this, but I think it's important to go back and correct the record with some of these lies that are going out there. So, Nex Benedict, that gave you a bit of a catch-up on this story. You know, there's this saying, the lie goes around the world before the truth gets its boots on. I feel like there's been several examples of that just in the last week or so, this being the latest. I remember when this story first broke and I put out the Trumpet Morning Brief, which you can sign up to on our website. We put that out every day with some of the top news stories. And so I was looking at the news and it was all about Nex Benedict one particular morning. And it was all about how the homosexual agenda had killed this individual, anti-LGBT activists had killed this individual, how, you know, she was dead now because Oklahoma has restricted bathroom laws, or because people have, they were blaming certain Twitter accounts that exposes the propaganda going on in schools, and they were saying, well, you have blood on your hands, you know, you saw the montage. And I remember, you know, kind of in those morning briefs, I want to cover the important news and also the news that's kind of talked about a lot. You know, so you wake up and, okay, this is what I need to know today. And sometimes when you have a story like that, it's a little challenging. I'm like, well, it's everywhere in the news. If you want to be informed about what people are talking about, maybe I should put that in. But it was also very clear this is a breaking story. We do not have the full picture. And so I decided not to cover it. Then the next week, it was very clear, okay, we got a bit better of a picture. I covered it then, where it was clear that we did have a bit more. The video, there was surveillance footage that showed Nex walking fine after this supposed fight. You know, I saw all these Twitter things talking about how she was beaten to a pulp, and it showed how evil anybody that opposes the transgender agenda is, because she was completely beaten up and couldn't walk, and she died the next day. The video footage came out, completely disproved that. And then yesterday we have the official coroner's report coming out from the Oklahoma Medical Examiner. That showed that her death had nothing to do with the fight. That she died of a drug overdose, most likely suicide. like, it wasn't injuries the next day. It wasn't that she hit her head on the floor and there was some nothing like that whatsoever. She committed suicide. And, you know, the ones with blood on their hands are not the ones opposing what the transgender industry is doing to our children. It's that industry. It's the trans ideologues. It's the people that are pushing teens into this lifestyle that makes them thoroughly miserable. They're the ones that have blood on their hands when you get the full truth. But of course, the media did this. They put that out everywhere. They're not going to do a segment like this where they come back and say, okay, actually, we've got the full truth now, and it turns out that was all nonsense and all of these protests were nothing. That's not going to happen. But we'll correct the record here on their behalf. It was all lies. I had a few other news bits I was going to get to, but I think I'll just skip over them for now. I usually try to put page numbers on my notes, yet somehow today every single page says page one. So that's not very helpful in determining how far through my notes I am. But I'm going to skip a few things. I wanted to play a clip. This is from a video that I saw on Twitter. It's representative, I think, of quite a few different videos that I've seen on Twitter from women. Play the clip. See for yourself. Hopefully, George, you can make out from that the one that I'm talking about.
I feel like millennial moms were just duped. I just dropped my daughter off at her daycare, and she's been going to daycare for almost 3 years now. And people tell me, it'll get easier, as you drop her off, she'll get used to it. It has never gotten easier. I've just learned to numb the pain. And it doesn't help the fact that, you know, my career is in early childhood. So she goes through spurts where she's really excited for daycare, and then she goes through spurts like this morning where she has to talk herself through, mommy's gonna come back after work. And she's anxious, and she tells me her belly hurts and there's butterflies in her tummy. And I'm a social worker by trade, so I've learned to help give her, you know, those words to say, or, you know, practicing coping skills, and, you know, when she misses mommy, what she could do. But, like, why do I have to do that? I feel like I was duped because, you know, when you're 20 years old, or, you know, when you're in high school, you're told to go to college, get a good degree, make something of your life. And so what? I did.
Talk about how she felt like she did everything that she was told to do as a woman to have a happy, fulfilling life. I thought it was a pretty tragic video. And like I said, I see one or two of these videos going viral every week now where, you know, she talks about, well, right now she has a very good job. Her partner has a good job. They're earning a lot of money. They have a nice big house. They have money for going out and doing things. But she'd much rather give all of that up and have a smaller house and not go out and do things as much and just be able to spend time with her kids. But she also just talked about how, well, that's much harder to do now. Like if she'd have planned for that from the start, if she'd have planned from that 5 years ago, that would be very doable. And she wished she had. But from where they are now, you know, they took out a big loan to get the house. And if they downsize with interest rates where they are now, they're still going to be paying a similar amount in mortgage. And, you know, that it's much harder for her to get into that position than it would have been had she had that as the goal all along. And, you know, later on in there, she talks about how she's dropping off her baby son now. He's just a few months old. And he's being dropped off in daycare now so that she can go back to work. And I think what you're seeing is you're seeing more and more people seeing and women waking up to what they've been told, that they've been sold a lie, what they've been brought up doing, saying, well, you need to go to college and you need to have a high powered job and this is how you live a fulfilling life, that it's making them miserable and it's making their kids miserable. And they're realizing that it's not working. And there's a few news stories that I think tie together that I wanted to talk about that seem a little bit unrelated. There's another one here that I wanted to talk about. Britain's National Health Service. Britain's National Health Service is no longer going to be prescribing puberty blockers to children. So these drugs that cause lasting harm, they're not giving them out anymore. They're only going to be available as a part of a much smaller clinical trial that's going to start at the end of the year. And they accepted this proposal where they would stop giving these drugs out in July 2022. They're finally now putting it in practice about 2 years later. You know, and so children are no longer going to have their bodies and minds destroyed in Britain by these drugs. And it says something about how harmful they are that even in our woke, transgender-obsessed culture, that can be shut down. There is so much clear, obvious harm that we're stopping it. And it says something far worse about our society that we're giving them out at all. And I think despite the harms, there are going to be a lot of people that are going to be just ideologically committed to pushing these. And it wouldn't surprise me if these clinical trials end up providing the loophole to keep them going out at a rate just like before or even higher. But at least there's clear evidence that people, despite everything, are able to see this is wrong and it's causing harm. This is a story that was doing the rounds today, where America's support for homosexual marriage has dropped for the first time in about a decade. It's been this steady growth of people accepting it. And now it's gone back. It used to be 69% supported it. Now, that was in 2022. In 2023, it was 67%. And so again, there's some, it's a few that are waking up to the fact that, well, they're waking up to all the perversion they've unleashed on the world by backing this movement. They're seeing the results of it. And they're starting to wake up and realize, well, actually, this wasn't a good idea. I think what all of these stories have in common is people can see the effect of the decisions that we've made are terribly and fundamentally wrong. You know, women waking up and seeing, well, cause and effect, and that this way of life that they've been told will make them happy isn't and is producing misery, and they're questioning that. And the British health system and people within that seeing that this agenda that they've been told will help protect trans kids and help them is not helping them. They can see the effect. People can see the effect of homosexual marriage. And for most, still, the ideology is so powerful and pervasive, and even they've had their minds warped. It's harder for them to straighten it out. You know, that they're not, most aren't accepting that. But some few can see something is badly wrong here. And they can see what we're doing is causing real problems. And at our college, at Herbert W. Armstrong College that we have, I've been teaching Old Testament survey this year. And one of the big things that has really stood out to me is just how much of the Old Testament is lessons from cause and effect. You know, so much of that is listing history of cause and effect. I mean, Moses even talks about this very directly when he at the start of Deuteronomy, he kind of gives this sermon all about Israel's history and learning from that history. And he says in, Deuteronomy 4 and verse 6, verse 5, it says, "Behold, I've taught you statutes and judgments, even as the Eternal my God commanded me that you should do so in the land whither you go to possess it. Keep therefore and do them, for this is your wisdom and your understanding in the sight of the nations, which shall hear all these statutes and say, surely this great nation is a wise and understanding people. For what nation is there so great who has God so nigh unto them as the Eternal our God in all things that we shall call upon them?" So Moses was saying, you know, look, if you keep God's law, it's going to cause great things to happen. You're going to be prosperous and successful as a nation. Other nations are going to look at you and say, they have something I want. They're doing something right. And we need to look at what they're doing and understand and learn from them, because we need to copy that. But then earlier in the chapter, in verse 3, he says, "Your eyes have seen what the Eternal did because of Baal-peor. For all the men that followed Baal-peor, the Eternal your God has destroyed from among you." You need to see as well, look back at your history and see times when you did things wrong and there were negative outcomes. It caused curses. You know, and it goes on to talk about that in the rest of the chapter, that, well, if you forget that, if you get away from God's law, you're going to cause all of these negative things to happen. And we have one of our other three booklets is called The Former Prophets. And it's a fantastic book for understanding so much of the Old Testament. You know, it all revolves around so much of that book. It's focused on the former prophets, so Joshua, Judges, 1 Kings, 2 Kings, 1 Samuel, 2 Samuel. That's a good chunk of the Old Testament. And understanding it. And in that book, Mr. Flurry writes, there's cause and effect. True education revolves around learning cause and effect. That's what much of this history tells us, is it's inspired history. written down by prophets so that we can, and inspired by God, so that the lessons can come across clearly. And they show, well, Israel did these things that were good and they caused massive prosperity, and they did these things were bad and they caused all of these problems. It's there for individuals. And even very righteous individuals like Abraham or David, it also gets into areas where they made mistakes and had problems and shows how that caused them suffering. And it's very direct and clear. Well, they had this particular sin and it caused them problems in this area. And in these news stories, people are waking up to seeing some cause and effect, and that what we're doing is not working. And it really needs to, it points us back to God's law, and it points us back to that law as the real cause for what will make us happy. In 1982, Herbert W. Armstrong wrote, "It is simply a matter of cause and effect. That law is the way of love, and love is outgoing concern. It is giving, helping, serving, sharing. But human nature pulls humanity in the exact opposite direction, into being self-centered, selfish, greedy, the way of vanity, the way of getting, taking, accumulating, of competition, strife, envy, jealousy, resentment, hatred. God's great spiritual law is simply the cause of peace, happiness, abundant well-being. The violation of that law by yielding to the pulls of human nature is simply the absence of peace, happiness, and abundant well-being. God laid before man the knowledge of his law, his way. He compels man to choose. Would man want God to force him to go God's way, contrary to the desires of human nature? Never. He would cry out, 'God is unfair. Man wants the free choice.' So to fulfill his purpose, the Creator marked out a duration of 7,000 years. The first six of those millennial days were set aside for man to choose whether to obey God's law, that is to voluntarily come under God's government, or work out his own ideas of human government. Man chose to reject God, his law, and his government. He elected to follow his desire of his carnal, self-centered nature. Yielding to human nature is the cause of war. Rebellion against God's law of peace is the cause of war." You know, that's why we have a news show that talks a lot about the Bible. Because you can't understand the news properly without the Bible. It shows us what is the cause. What is the cause for all the misery? For there's all these statistics about how depressed people are, how unhappy they are. What's the cause of that? I think what you get with some of these news stories is people are looking and say, okay, well, what we're doing now is not working. But we need to go one step further than saying, well, this particular policy was a mistake. Mr. Flurry, another booklet that he has, it's a fantastic booklet, Jeremiah and the Greatest Vision in the Bible. There's a chapter there on human nature that is really deep and profound for seeing our own sins and evil, our own heart for what it is. And Mr. Flurry writes there, "Our educational system looks upon man as being basically good and trustworthy. That philosophy destroys institutions and nations. We must see the evil in human nature or we will never solve our problems. That is where man's false hope lies, in an incredibly deceitful mind that is terminally ill. That here is where men generally place their trust. What deadly deceit." You know, we need to go beyond saying, well, that idea was bad, and we need to see the mind generating that idea was bad. Our own, looking for our own ways of figuring things out and our own ways of doing marriage and family and gender and child. You know, we can't do this. We need to go back to the Bible and look at what God says. And one of the pivotal verse of that whole chapter is, or one of them, is Jeremiah 17 and verse 9. "The heart is deceitful above all things and desperately wicked. Who can know it?" Mr. Flurry said, "Understanding this profound verse is more important than any education in this world. When we understand it, radical action is necessary. The greatest need is to understand God, to let him reveal our own sickness and heal it. Until we learn this lesson, we are living under a curse." And then a bit further down, he says, "We must learn that true education is founded on cause and effect. That is what God is forcing mankind, and even his own church, to face. Only God can explain the mind and emotions of man. Only he can lead us to trust him instead of our very sick minds." And that's what I think these news stories provide us with an opportunity to do. To see cause and effect, and that our ideas on how to run these things are flawed. I think you see at the moment too much of mankind, they do it wrong one way, but they still look to the human mind for another solution. And so then we find a different wrong way of doing it, a different mistaken way of doing it. But we need to see, no, it's mankind's mind that's the problem. And we need to look to God. And we need to see it in our own lives. We can look at cause and effect and see, okay, this can show us where I've been leaning to my own understanding and where I haven't been looking to God enough to show me how to do things. I've been letting my own ideas in here. So it's great that some people are realizing the answers of society are wrong. And I need to realize where we can get the answers from is only in the Bible. Well, that's about all we have time for. Thank you so much for listening to us. Those booklets I've mentioned, Former Prophets, America Under Attack, Jeremiah and the Greatest Vision in the Bible, we'd be very happy to send them to us. You can get that on our website, thetrumpet.com. You can email us, td@thetrumpet.com, or give us a call, 1-866-930-3024, and we'd be very happy to hear from you.